The show's Live and Local. It's your connection to local music and more. And my guests today, Rebecca Nettle-Fiol, who is on the dance faculty at the University of Illinois. And one of her pieces that is being performed on this weekend's November dance programs at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. And the music that she has set is by Toby Twining, who is a composer and singer, a graduate of the University of Illinois. And he's with us on the show today, and we'll be hearing lots of his music and hear where it all came from and something about the dance program as well. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. That was simply called Hymn, as in H-Y-M-N, by Toby Twining Music from the disc called Shaman or Shaman, take your pick, and heard here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. My guests on today's show are Toby Twining himself and Becky Nettle, or Becky Nettle-Fiol, to use her complete married name. Becky is on the dance faculty at the University of Illinois. And they're giving their November dance programs this weekend, starting tonight at 7:30 and continuing Friday and Saturday. Dance at Illinois always features at various times their own faculty as choreographers, also sometimes their graduate students as choreographers, and always their students as dancers. And every once in a while, the faculty will dance as well. But for the purpose of today's conversation, we're going to focus especially on the music that Becky has set for her piece that's on the program, and it's Toby Twining's music from a CD that isn't out yet. Are we going to get to sample it? I guess yes. We'll find out. We're going to get to sample. That was Toby Twining right there, and Becky Nettle is with us. Thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you.
Great. Nice to be here.
So this was the music we just heard, Toby, was the first cut off of your first recording?
Correct.
Which was made right here in Champaign-Urbana?
No, this one. Well, we recorded it in New York City, but I was just reminiscing with Becky how that composition is something that arose from when I was an accompanist in a dance class for Jan Urquhart, who's now the chair of the dance program. But I was playing for her class, and this melody came out, and I was overtone singing, and I knew, gosh, this has got to be a piece, and it developed into one, and that's what starts off my first CD.
And simply called Hymn. What does the title come from?
It comes from just a general sense of time in my life when I was undergoing, you know, some very positive changes. I was in the middle of a separation from my first wife. And so it's kind of a devotional piece.
To the changes, or to your first wife, or
to transformation. It expresses grief and, I think, coming out on the positive end, on the other side of the process.
And you've had a number of transformations. Head is a little clogged here today, and therefore so is the brain. You were just telling me as we were listening to that music that you're kind of coming back to this business, the music business necessarily, or working with Toby Twining music and making recordings and
compositions? Well, a little bit of both. in 96, my first ensemble in New York City dissolved, and I remarried. And felt I needed to, you know, have a steady income and be a responsible, you know, husband. And so I started teaching. I was down in Baltimore at the University of Maryland, Baltimore County, for several years. And after about 14 years of, you know, pursuing the elusive steady paycheck in academia and other kinds of work, I've decided to just return full time to my professional work in the city. So
New York City.
Yeah.
As if there is another.
Right.
There are, in fact.
Yes, I'm jaded and spoiled, all that.
Well, the reason that I asked about, you know, was your first, was this the recording you had made in Champaign? Is that I understand you did make a recording, maybe your first one.
Well, actually,
some of your compositions, anyway.
Before moving to New York City, I met Mark Rubel, who has a studio, you know, right downtown in Champaign.
Pogo Studio.
Yeah, Pogo Studios. And he and I just, you know, clicked immediately. He was the first engineer I met who understood, you know, the kind of sound I was looking for. And I was always wondering why, like, God, here's this rock and roll guy who knows what I'm going for with this sort of abstruse, you know, vocal music. Why is that? And one day I was up in his apartment and I noticed on the shelf he had an LP of, like, Akagam's, you know, sacred choral works, and I just realized his range, his taste, his knowledge of music was so vast that accounted for it.
Yeah, I was just trying
In part. He's also a very imaginative guy.
Well, he's an imaginative guy. He can be a little bit crazy. I was just picturing a photo I saw of him in his getup with Captain Rat and the Blind Rivets.
Yeah.
For him. He plays bass, I think. So, yeah, pretty wide-ranging. And the recording you made with him was a cappella you, right?
Well, when I first got to New York, I was getting commissions from modern dance choreographers, and they were interested in the vocal work I was doing. And of course, I wasn't able to hire, you know, a bunch of singers to record and rehearse this stuff with me. So I'd come back to Champaign and work with Mark, and we would work, you know, enormous stretches of time, and I would multi-track all this stuff, you know, sometimes 12 voices and whatever.
But yourself singing.
Yeah, it was a lot of fun, and it was a very interesting process. It turns out a certain kind of sound, but it's sort of like being in a room full of mirrors. You know, all you do is hear yourself, really, even if you're singing bass through soprano, which, you know, I was doing. But it's certainly, I think there's a lot more texture, there's something more rewarding about having really, you know, different people singing on these different parts.
So. Is that pretty much exclusively the type of music you write, is for unaccompanied voices?
No, I decided to focus on that just before I moved to New York. I had a lot of great opportunities in music while I was here. And one of them was, of course, with Mark Rubel, and another was meeting Bill Brooks, who is no longer here, but he was over at the music department for many years, a composer, conductor, singer, whose specialty is, you know, what we call extended vocal techniques, at, you know, 20th century explorations of the voice that are outside of the European, you know, art song tradition or vocal technical tradition. And so it includes a lot of world music sounds. It includes sounds that just come from, you know, playing with the voice and what things you can make up, things that relate to speech, jazz scat syllables, imitating other instruments, etc. And, you know, figuring out a way to compose with these sounds. And I was so I had just a fabulous sort of eye-opening experience working with Bill, and realized there was so much new ground to explore just with the human voice. So it wasn't really until around the year 2000, that I realized that I wanted to return to, you know, instrumental writing as well.
Were these vocal techniques that you worked on with Bill, were those things that he could produce himself or that he just knew about? Did you just discover that you could produce some of these sounds, or how did that happen?
All the above. Bill, you know, was capable of teaching a lot of these things. And some of these things I would just discover on myself by, you know, playing around, improvising. yeah, all the above.
And you had said earlier that you can produce, like, the low bass up to high soprano range.
Yeah, well, I'm a baritone, and you know, back in the day, I had a high D flat above the treble clef staff, but not anymore.
So, talking about extended vocal techniques, we heard some, obviously, in the piece that we opened with, that you call just overtone singing.
Right.
How does that work?
Well, it's hard to explain, but
I imagine.
It's a vocal technique that's most common in the indigenous music of the Asian steppes, and there are some examples also from, you know, South African music and, believe it or not, in Sardinian vocal music.
Where is Sardinia? I should know.
Off the coast of Italy. Basically, it's a way of using the human voice. How do I say this? Guitar players and string players out there, you know how you barely touch the string in the middle and it gives you a pitch that's an octave above the open string. Well, that pitch is what we call a harmonic. And the capacity to make harmonics is also in, you know, other instruments, including the human voice. And the way we do it with the human voice is by manipulating the tongue and the shape of the mouth, just the way we do when we speak, and we make different vowel colors. Different vowel colors basically use different harmonics in order to, you know, make those sounds. And it can be converted into a form of singing. And the most famous repertoires are Tuvan and Mongolian. It's also the basic idea behind Tibetan chanting. It's vocal harmonics, and it's transferred to the West in a small way, but enough that, you know, we now have what we call a style of Western overtone singing. It's not any kind of pure world music style.
For those who listen to the show with any regularity and might have heard, was it last week or the week before, Tim Erickson, who was a...
Yes.
Do you know Tim?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
He was on here and did some live singing and playing, and there was one of the tunes where he just sort of threw in these sounds at the end, and he did do a little bit demonstration. So those who might have heard that, that's essentially what he was doing, and I was just kind of watching him, and it just looked like he was sort of opening, closing his mouth in a certain way, but really was what was going on was the part you can't see, which was, I guess, in the behind the closed mouth.
Well, I wasn't there. I don't know what he was doing. But, yeah, I mean, when someone's overtone singing, you basically see them rounding their lips and et cetera. Because it's just like I said, you're modifying the same sounds you make when you speak. It's just you slow it down and you control it in order to make melodies. I mean, I could demonstrate a little bit if you want, you know.
Yeah.
Sure.
Well, let's see. So I had a lower pitch that was steady, and then you heard these like whistle tones, and those are the harmonics that are in this, the composite vibration of that lower pitch. And then another thing, it's a little less common, but you can actually hold that overtone steady and change the lower pitch. So let's see. And it opens up new possibilities for harmonic changes and such.
And you discovered how to do this just from messing around with it.
Yeah. That's what composers do. We mess around.
We mess around. Well, and that's an invitation, folks listening, when you have nothing better to do or when you really want to annoy the folks on the other side of your cubicle, mess around and see what you can come up with and see how long you keep your job. It's live and local on FM 90.9. We're talking with Toby Twining of Toby Twining Music, whose music is going to be, has been set by choreographer Rebecca Nettlefield for her piece called In the String Room, which is going to be performed tonight through Saturday on the November Dance Program at the University of Illinois at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Programs today on FM 90.9 are made possible. Oh, this is kind of funny. just the name of this program. I'll start this again since I'm supposed to read these things intact. Programs on WYLL are made possible with support from Sinfonia.com, representing Extraordinary Voices on Friday, November 5th at 7:30 p.m. in the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. Baritone Ricardo Herrera joins Sinfonia in celebrating the works of William Schumann. More information is available at 333-6280. I wonder if Ricardo can produce those kinds of sounds. Certainly has a lovely voice.
Yes,
he can. Overall. Does he? Is the question.
Mm-hmm. Oh, does he? Oh, cool.
Well, he can. Has a lovely voice.
Whether he knows he can or not.
Oh, well, yeah. It's actually a lot of people can do it. They just don't get the opportunity.
Exactly. We're going to hear another cut from your early CD, Shaman. And this is the one that you just told me a bit ago was your favorite on this CD. Why is that?
Yeah, it really is. Well, I just enjoy the compositional elements. There's a lot of polyrhythm, polymeter. You'll hear a lot of African influence in it. When I was here in Urbana, I was playing Ghanaian Ewe drumming, and really loved that repertoire, and it certainly influenced me.
What do you mean by polymeter and rhythm?
So this is it's a vocal quartet. It's just four singers, and they're all singing in their own meter. The bass is singing a motif that isn't so unusual. Just for its pitches, it's bow be bow be bow be, just like that. But the tenor against that is going sha sh sha sh. Sha, sh, sh, ha, sh, sh, which makes a five against two. The sha is, or the ah vowel is making the two, and the sh sound is making a five. And so, and then the bass is doing three against five. And so once you start adding all these things together, you really got a bunch of, ratios of rhythms going against each other, but they're all kind of locking in. So there's that, and there's a melody that that I quote in the middle. That is a Javanese folk song. I can't pronounce this correctly. Ethnomusicologists, I apologize, but it's something like rikit rikit. But I call it Richie. And then and it's dedicated to Mark Rubel, my dear friend here in Champaign. And so it's Richie Rubel.
By Toby Twining Music here on Live and Local. Richie Rubel is the name of that tune. By Toby Twining, performed by Toby Twining Music on the disc called Shaman on Live and Local on FM 90.9. Toby Twining is with us on the show today, and along with Becky Nettle-Fiol, who collaborate on one of the pieces on this week's November dance programs at the University of Illinois. Opens tonight, continues tomorrow and Saturday, 7:30 each evening at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. And the piece that Becky's choreographed is called In the String Room, and Toby Twining's music actually comes from a forthcoming CD for which we have a sample that we'll hear a little later on in the program. But Toby, you mentioned early in this conversation that you were playing piano, I presume, for the dance classes.
I worked here for the dance department for several years as an accompanist.
And then you had some early commissions from dance companies. How did people discover your music in the first place? And then what do you think, and Becky, you should probably jump into this since you just told me as we're listening that you've choreographed like four of his pieces.
Mm-hmm.
What's choreographic about this music?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, the very first cut you started with, like I said, came literally from a dance class. I was playing for Jan Urquhart, and this you know, when you're watching a dance, a modern dance class, you have to improvise music that's going to work for what the teacher has shown the class, and they're going to, you know, they're going to do the movement, they're going to execute it. And so you have to basically do instant composition. It's really a lot of fun. And and sometimes I'll get pieces of music out of this, and so it's been very rewarding.
So in that case, you're sort of doing the opposite of what normally happens, where somebody choreographs a piece of music. You're almost creating the piece of music to match choreography.
Right. And then the cut you just played was also composed for dance, and that was done for a New York choreographer named Gus Solomons. And he had this entire part of his dance that he had structured out in fives, and this, you know, the whole thing was done. He was sort of the Cage, he worked in the Cage Cunningham model, and he created all the choreography separate from the music. And so I just composed this piece of music to go with it.
And the Cage Cunningham model reference to composer John Cage.
Yes.
And choreographer Merce Cunningham.
Yes.
How did folks in New York find out about you?
I figured that I could go to New York and survive as a dance accompanist, and I wanted to, you know, start my career as a composer there, and figured I could start out with getting commissions from choreographers. And Gus Solomons had been a guest teacher here, and I had had accompanied his classes, so I called him up and said, "Hi, you know, I'm Toby Twining. We met at the University of Illinois." He said, "Sure, come on by, we'll talk." And we did, and he commissioned me, and you know, people just start to hear your music. Dancers hear your music when you play for classes, and just, you know, word of mouth. It's a small, it's a tight community there, and so it's not too hard for news to get around.
Mm-hmm. And he's incredibly talented dance musician. So
here's your $50.
When you're working with him in the studio and he's playing. You know, like, I don't think people realize that dance accompanists are constantly making up new pieces on the spot all during, for the whole hour and a half that you're in a class. You know, the teacher gives the combination, makes the movement, then the dance musician makes up something, like, right on the spot.
Yeah, it's not really free improv. I mean, sometimes I will pull in, you know, something I already, you know, a jazz song or a piece of classical music that, you know, fits, and then you maybe even have to modify it a little bit, but oftentimes, you're really starting from scratch, and mm-hmm. it's incredibly rewarding and creative work.
But it also requires an incredible amount of skill. Not everybody can just do that. So he has a lot of skill, and that's recognized by the dance choreographers, so they invite him to do work.
And you learn, of course, an empathy for movement, mm-hmm. for dance.
See, this is actually something that's a little new to me, just even thinking about it this way. Becky, what happens in these classes when you're, you know, as an instructor, you mm-hmm. you just start to, you know, teach the students certain gestures or certain patterns, and then the accompanist just adds some music so that they can hear that? Or,
well, what we do is, you know, every exercise, basically in most modern classes, contemporary modern classes, for example, mine, I make up everything that the dancers do. So before I get to class, I spend a couple hours in the studio making up the material that they're going to learn. And it starts with a warm-up, you know, different steps along the way, more warm-up type things, skill building, and then toward the end more of a dancing kind of combination, or two or three. And so I give the meter, I give the tempo, I give everything by demonstrating to the students this is the movement. Then they're, meanwhile, the accompanist is watching, and then they're having to think, okay, in a couple of seconds, when I say 5, 6, 7, 8, or whatever it is, they've got to jump right in and play. That's it.
And ideally, the music you play will help the dancers get the movement.
Mm-hmm.
But then when you're putting on a dance concert, it goes
different.
The other way.
Not always. I mean, people have all kinds of processes for working with music. I mean, sometimes we start with the music. Sometimes we start with the dance and ask a composer, like Toby was describing, to compose to the dance you make. Or sometimes we work together collaboratively, which would be the ideal situation, but it's difficult. It requires a lot more time do it that way.
There are many ways that, you know, the relationship between the music and the dance can work together in the dance theatrical form. Mm-hmm. One of the reasons I really love working with Becky is that she can really square off with the music. So one possible relationship is the music really, you know, takes a back seat and lets the dance do the driving, and the music is never particularly in the forefront of one's attention because it's just to sort of help create an atmosphere and a mood and sort of generally support the dynamics of the movement, maybe even a specific theme or such. But it as music, it's not interesting enough to listen to in itself. It wouldn't stand on its own two feet as concert music. It really is functioning to support the dance, and that's its use. And then there's music that can stand on its own two feet as concert music. And in that case, the choreographer has to be able to cope with the music on a more sophisticated level so that there's a real dialogue between the choreography and the music. And ideally, the music will help convey the intentions of the choreographer and even convey something about the movement that the audience wouldn't get otherwise. And ideally, the choreographer will help us hear more in the music that we wouldn't hear otherwise. So it's a wonderful kind of chemistry that's possible.
Becky, in the four times you've set or worked with Toby's music, mm-hmm. for pieces of yours, have you used different versions of these processes, or have you always gone at it one way with his music?
Well, the last three, I've actually just taken music that he's written and choreographed with that music in my mind, because we don't live in the same place, so we can't. You know, if he were here, we could go in the studio. I could show him some things I'm doing. He could show me some things he's working on. You know, we could do it more in process, but isn't really possible. And I really enjoy having the music there and figuring out how I can dialogue with it, as he said, or add my own voice to it, not just sort of be a slave to it, but try to be another voice in the music. So the first piece we did was a collaboration between another choreographer and myself, and Toby was here. I think you were a student, maybe. And so that was 1986. I don't remember all the details about that, but that was our first one. But the other three, yes, to answer your question.
Including
the new one.
This one, the new mm-hmm. one called In the String Room. Mm-hmm. We're going to lead up to some music from Eurydice, which is the composition that you do set in this mm-hmm. piece. But first, let's hear something from, I guess this was your second commercial CD, Toby?
Yeah. Yeah.
Chrysalid Requiem?
Yes, Chrysalid Requiem. It came out about 7 or 8 years after my first CD. I had studied composition mostly here with a man named Ben Johnston, whose field has been a particular form of microtonal music, which will scare everybody as soon as they hear that. But to try to help explain this, if you're familiar with barbershop quartet music or even a lot of Renaissance vocal music, there's something that happens in the tuning with voices where they strike these brilliant consonances that are frequencies that literally fall between the cracks of the keys of a piano. They are microtonal intervals, but they're consonant. They're even more consonant than what, you know, can be done on a piano. And Ben basically systematized a technique using these musical intervals. And in New York, I continued to work with his music some and had sung a bit of it. And I took a plunge in 96, I guess, or 97. I realized that I had to go in this direction with my own composing. And Chrysalid Requiem is the first, you know, major piece I put out using that technique.
What is the reference in the title?
There's a lot of harmonic color I'm exploring in the music, and so, you know, there's the reference to the butterfly and the chrysalis and reemergence and rebirth and such, because it's the traditional Latin requiem text plus several movements from their burial service. But being a good positive Protestant, I'm thinking of it in terms of regeneration or something, you know, something, you know, rather than mourning. And so the image of a butterfly and all that color suggested the title.
And it's a very colorful cover as well. This is from Chrysalid Requiem of Toby Twining, and this is the first of three sequences from the Requiem Mass, and this is probably the most famous. Dies Irae, Dies Illa, Day of Wrath, that day shall dissolve the world into embers, as David prophesied with the Sibyl.
Can we play all three?
How long?
Straight through?
Let's see. How long are they?
6 or 7 minutes.
We'll give it a go.
We're out of time.
Oh, bye bye.
We'll watch the clock and see what happens. All right, it's music by Toby Twining on Live and Local. First of three sequences from Chrysalid Requiem by Toby Twining, with an ensemble of, let's see, 2, 4, 6, 8, 10 singers. And Toby Twining is going to be, well, he's here with us in the studio, and he's here on the University of Illinois campus because one of his pieces is being set, partially set, by Becky Nettlefield for this weekend's dance concerts, called November Dance. The composition is called In the String Room, and that is one of several pieces, obviously, on the program with other dance faculty members represented. Oh, some wonderful titles that these pieces have. Autophobia, choreography by Paige Cunningham, and Tanz für Guy?
I think so.
Yes, Linda Lahovic's piece. She's on the faculty. And The Black Crow Flew Over the Sleeping Dog at Midnight, which is a collaboration between Kirsty Simpson and Michelle Rizzo, and there's other pieces, I think, on the program as well. Mm-hmm. The concerts are this, well, tonight, Friday and Saturday, 7:30, and we'll hear in just a few minutes some music that, in fact, Becky did set for the program. Today's show is made possible in part with support from 10,000 Villages in downtown Champaign. Did I read this one already? No? Mm-hmm. Celebrating their 25th year of fair trade retail in downtown Champaign, 10,000 Villages offers ground and whole bean coffee purchased from farmers using internationally recognized fair trade standards. We also have support from Silver Creek in downtown Urbana, serving lunch and dinner every day with a brunch on Sunday. For 20 years, Silver Creek has served fresh and seasonally current dinners by the fireplace in warm wood ambiance. Silver Creek offers over 100 of the world's finest wines and draft beers. So, Becky, I asked Toby this question a little earlier, which is what he thought appealed about his music for dance. But as a choreographer, mm-hmm. what appeals to you about his music for dance?
Wow. Well, it's really special. It's just really very special music, I feel. I really appreciate the innovation in the material, but then the structure that Toby uses, the formal kinds of structures, which I feel like as a choreographer I'm also interested in, so I sort of feel a sympathy that way, and it really elicits movement to me, his music. And it may be, I don't know why, but
she likes singers too.
I do like singers.
I married one,
and a lot of my work I usually use singing.
Well, that just proves that she likes one particular singer.
Well, yeah, no, right. But besides that, I tend to use a lot of vocal music. You might have noticed in past choreographies.
Well, it's something that singers have in common with dancers. Mm-hmm. Our instrument is ourselves.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, and that's not. There's a real reason that a lot of experimental vocalists have been some way or another affiliated with mm-hmm. dance. Bobby McFerrin used to mm-hmm. play class. Meredith mm-hmm. Monk. You know, study dance.
Right. True.
Bobby McFerrin used to play for dance classes?
Yeah, he used to play dance classes when he lived in Utah.
You know, Toby sang some with Bobby McFerrin, right?
Well, once? Nah, I mean, did a workshop, met him. Yeah, we have a bunch of buddies in common, but we haven't worked together.
Okay.
Well, it's about time.
Maybe.
Invite him on your next CD.
I might.
He might say yes.
Yeah.
He
might say yes. And I'll buy a house.
I mean, you know, they got him to be on Wait, Don't Tell Me on this weekend on our companion station, AM 580. It's a quiz show.
Okay.
And he was doing the quiz, so you just never know.
Mm-hmm. True.
There's probably more to gain from being in your music. Well, I suppose you never know. Depends who's listening to Wait, Don't Tell Me. Well, let's hear some music from Eurydice, which Becky set for her piece. What does this come from, the whole album concept?
Well, in 2008, I was commissioned by the Wilma Theater in Philadelphia to compose music for their production of a play called Eurydice by the award-winning playwright Sarah Ruhl. And we decided it would be for four voices and cello. And the production took place in May 2008, and I subsequently developed some of the music so that I could get a full CD out of it. And so what's on the recording is a composite of some extended pieces of music, then others are, you know, snippets that worked as, you know, incidental music for the play.
And we're going to hear the first two segments, which are part of the music that you set for your piece in the String Room.
Good.
Music by Toby Twining here on Live and Local. This is an exclusive, folks. The CD isn't out yet, and so you're hearing it in advance. And, of course, you can hear it as part of the dance program tonight, tomorrow, or Saturday. This is Live and Local. Music from Eurydice, incidental music, and extensions, as he calls it here on the CD by Toby Twining with vocal quartet and cello from a CD that is soon to come out. And those two pieces were among four tracks from the CD that Becky Nettle has choreographed in her piece called In the String Room. What is that title refer
well,
to?
It comes from the third piece, which we haven't heard yet, which is called The String Room. Which was the first one, when I was listening to samples of these this summer, that was the first one that grabbed me. It's just so beautiful. I felt like that was the centerpiece, sort of, in my mind, of the piece. And it comes from the play, as Toby talked about. And we talked about it on the phone. He gave me some descriptions and from the play and from the music that he wrote, and something that, just the way he talked about it, it really captured me. So I chose that one, and I added in the string room, because to me the piece, which also features photographs by my daughter Natalie Fiol, projected on the whole back of the, you know, the psych on the back of the stage, provides kind of an environment, almost like you're in a room or you're in a space. So I liked the way it locates you by saying in the string room.
We'll try to go out with a little bit of that.
Okay.
Segment from Toby Twining's music. I do need to take a break here and mention some of the other events going on in our listening area. Of course, we're talking about the University of Illinois November Dance Program tomorrow and Saturday at 7:30 at the Krannert Center. There is also a program called God Grew Tired of Us that's happening at the School of Art at Illinois Wesleyan University in Bloomington. That's at 7 o'clock tonight. And a country bluegrass and gospel jam for something a bit different at the Community Center in Findlay. That's at 7 o'clock tonight also. The High Bees playing tonight at 8 o'clock at the Independent Media Center. That's a traditional Irish group that we did an interview for yesterday. Sinfonia da Camera presents its program at the Krannert Center with vocalist Ricardo Herrera, music by Schumann and Schumann. That's tonight at 7:30. Conklin's Barn 2 Dinner Theater is presenting a play called Not Now, Darling. It's a comedy running each weekday, well, Thursday, Friday, Saturday at 6 for dinner, and then a Sunday brunch at around noon. The Station Theater in Urbana is presenting A Steady Rain. That's at 8 o'clock start time through Sunday and into next weekend as well, I believe. Murder by Natural Causes is put on by the Rantoul Theater Group. Performance tomorrow night at 8 o'clock and Saturday at 8 and others as well. The In Your Ear Big Band is at the Cowboy Monkey in downtown Champaign tomorrow night at 6:30. And at Eastern Illinois University in Charleston and the Doudna Fine Arts Center, it's a faculty artist program called Musical Montage with violinist Anna Cromwell and organist and pianist Richard Rossi. And the drama program at Champaign Central High School is presenting Hairspray. That opens, I think, tomorrow. I thought it opened tonight, but that might be happening tonight, tomorrow, Saturday. 7 o'clock performances, and you can check out the website. And finally, it's Inherit the Wind at the Catherine Randolph Theater in Danville tomorrow night at 8 o'clock. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9. Our show is supported by the Corkscrew Wine Emporium, 203 North Vine in Urbana, with wines for the serious collector to the first-time buyer. Wine tastings are held in the Bouvance Tasting Room on Saturday from noon to 4. This Saturday's tasting features an array of Italian and domestic wines. More information is at thecorkscrew.com. Toby and Becky, thank you very much for joining us on the show.
Thank you. It's been a joy.
It's really pleasurable and entertaining music and fascinating music as well. And we'll hear now what the music that Becky was just referring to is. Mm-hmm.
In the String Room.
The title piece, it's the title track, so to speak, to her choreography for this weekend. It's Live and Local on FM 90.9, and you're listening to Illinois Public Media, WYNL FM and HD1 and HD2 Urbana, with translators W266 AF Urbana, W293 AF Danville. WYNL is a member-supported service of the College of Media at Illinois.